I used to think nothing happened here. The truth is, everything happens here.
A dark secret.
When do we meet your partner?
In his own good time.
Awakened by a mysterious stranger.
I saw a plastic bag in the back seat.
Was it little boy size?
It was head size.
This June.
I know your name!
What about the house?
It scares me even to this day.
An old friend is coming home.
Susan!
Life is such a precious gift.
I don't know how to stop it.
Based on Stephen King's best-selling novel.
Let me in, Danny.
What's happening to this town?
Rob Lowe, Andre Brower, Rutger Hauer, and Donald Sutherland. Salem's Lot. Don't miss two nights of suspense beginning Sunday, June 20th at 8.
I happen to like it here.
Only on TNT.
Episode 85, is that 85, right?
Yep.
The Nintendo Dreamcast, our last episode of Rebootoween 2015. We decided to watch not one, but two movies, because we did the original Salem's Lot and the reboot, so Danny watched them both. I now own both and have watched them both as well.
That has been my experience with most of these reboots. I've had to rewatch the original.
Matt did not have time, but we won't begrudge him as a parent.
I had time. I just couldn't find it anywhere.
And Ish is not with us tonight for medical reasons, so he will not be coming a bloody pirate.
He had surgery, but he did post on the thing that he would be here Wednesday. He said he would be here Wednesday. So I guess it's not that big of a deal.
Neither Matt or Ish will be bloody pirates tonight.
Yeah.
What?
You didn't watch
if you'd watch
Blood,
the movie, you'd get that.
Yeah, I guess not. I did watch half of the remake on YouTube, but it was super zoomed in, so it cut off all their heads on the bottom, left and right.
Why
and
would somebody audio, post that?
The audio was really low. I don't know.
It was a cam of some guy's TV while he was watching a show, but he didn't position the camera correctly or something.
Something like that. Either that or it was recorded in a different format, like PAL or something.
Sounds good. You didn't get to see Rob Lowe's majestic hair in that movie?
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out if he has a wig on in that movie or if that's just his actual hair in that movie.
It doesn't look like any hair I've ever seen Rob Lowe with before.
Yeah. Or like a normal person would have on their head. So what have you guys been playing, Matt? What video games have you been playing?
Absolutely nothing.
Tell me about the video games you've been playing, Matt.
I haven't played shit.
No? What about you, Danny?
Nothing really. Just I played, I think Thursday was the only night this week that I got to play video games, and I did a couple hours of Witcher.
Are you about to beat it? You're on the precipice?
Yeah, I feel like it. But I felt like I was about to beat it for the last, 8 or 9 game sessions I went into.
Right on.
I definitely want to try and beat it before Fallout 4 and Battlefront come out, so I can just stop worrying about it. Because I know if I don't beat it before they come out, I may never get back to
probably
it.
Probably not, no. I feel like Fallout 4 is going to be the only game I play for about a year, probably. But I'm pretty excited about that. What do we got, 2 weeks left? It comes out the 14th.
I thought it was, I guess. I thought it was 2 weeks last week.
I don't
look at release dates.
The 10th? Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't look at the date because I ordered it from Bethesda, and Bethesda doesn't ship it till the day that it releases. So I won't get it till a week after everybody else.
Unless you're buying a physical copy.
I got the Pip-Boy edition. Man.
That's right.
Are you buying a digital copy then?
Yeah, probably.
November 10th.
I don't know.
Are you going to get that sweet bundle, man?
What does it come with?
The bundle, that Xbox bundle?
Oh,
Black Friday gets Fallout 4, Xbox One, and is it Metal Gear Solid 5?
Then I have to wait till Christmas to play it.
Or just play it on Black Friday.
I wouldn't get it till Christmas is what I'm saying. Like,
why not?
It would have to be a gift for my family.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Fuck that. Your family's dumb.
I know. Fuck them.
They don't understand.
Fucking assholes. Yeah.
That's stupid.
Yeah. Well, Cordelia's birthday's coming up. That's trumps everything.
Yeah. Fair enough. I'm just excited to play all those mods on my Xbox One version. Do they do that on the PlayStation 4 version? You can play the mods, right?
Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
Mods are dumb anyway.
Not in Fallout. Fallout mods are like, well, I designed an entirely new campaign for the game. Yeah. So
there's a super cool mod. I think it's called like Wasteland Survival or whatever, Fallout 3, where a guy went in and he like redid all the combat. So like getting shot kills you.
I think we talked about another mod where they took New Vegas and made it into a winter wasteland instead of a desert.
Yep. A lot of cool mods. Cool. Like, just the mods for Fallout are probably the best thing about them. I'm really excited to play all those mods on my Xbox One.
I've always, I don't think I've ever really played any games with mods, but I always see the, like, images, like, when you know you've modded Skyrim too much when, and it'd just be, like, a picture of, like, Goku chasing
Spider-Man,
like, yeah, in a convertible through the, you know, just like dumb crap like that.
Super excited though, yeah, man. It's the Xbox One. This is so great.
It must be nice.
Got my new Xbox Elite controller.
How was that?
You see those? I didn't get one.
Okay.
I remember you were talking about getting one when they previewed it at.
They look super cool. I really do want one.
They're like $100 or some shit.
Yeah, I heard really good things.
Because they're fully modifiable.
I mean, people spend $150 on headphones. I can spend $100 on a controller, right?
Yeah.
Beats by Dre.
Yeah.
If it's worth it.
Whoa.
What?
Oh, nothing. We're good.
What'd you think?
I thought I turned off my mic, but no, I'm good. So let's get into the news then today. What's in video game news? Hit me with the latest news item.
Let's see here. South by Southwest canceled two video game events because of threats of violence.
So what were the events and why were they threatened with violence?
They were about like harassment online, like targeting like gamer gators and shit like that. And then people got pissed off.
I don't understand any of this shit. It's so dumb. I really just, oh no, something did happen. Just lost my headphones.
And then I still hear you.
Okay.
I hear you in one headphone now.
Yeah, that's what happened to me. One headphone went out, which is weird.
That's weird. But yeah.
Yeah, I hope maybe South by Southwest just canceled because they're like, you know what? Fuck this shit. This is dumb.
They were scared that something horrible was going to happen at the event. And then they came back and apologized for canceling.
Did they put it back on?
No, it was after the events were supposed to be on, I guess.
So I think like the one thing that actually did happen since the last time we did a podcast was the Sony conference or Sony exhibition.
Yeah, that's like nothing happened
Paris.
Though, really.
Yeah,
I mean that was like a non-news item.
I mean, they like had a couple of cool things.
Did they, Danny?
Yeah.
Like what?
Like finally a release date for No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
In June next year, and like the only thing that really stood out to me was that. They made a game, like one of my favorite studios, the one that did like Beyond Two Souls, is making a game called Detroit.
Quantum Dreams.
Yeah, Quantic Dreams.
Quantic Dreams.
Is making a game called Detroit, which is actually based on a demo they made for, it's a technical demo, it wasn't even a game, for the PS3 in like 2013. And I remember watching it and thinking it was really cool, but I didn't expect them to ever come back to it. But it's like Project Kara was a technical demo, and it was like a 3 or 4 minute video about a recently assembled android basically just getting like diagnostically tested before being moved out of the factory. And so they're like, speak in a different language, try to move your arms, try to move your legs. And then at the
so you're
end,
saying it's like short circuit the game?
Yeah, so, well, I guess, yeah. But like, well, she's like, it's an actual person rather than just like a fucking robot.
Okay.
But she's like at the right at the end of the diagnostic test, the robot's like, so I'm merchandise? And they're like, yeah. And he's like, I thought that. And she's like, he's like, whoa, 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 you thought? time to cancel this project, and starts like disassembling her. Like, there's something wrong with your operating system. We have to rebuild you from scratch. And she's like, no, please don't fucking kill me. And then at the end, he lets her leave, even though she's like achieved perfect AI or whatever, obviously.
That's so the end of the game.
That's the end of the technical demo. Detroit, I think it takes place afterwards, where she's out in the world now, in a world of androids doing all the work for humans.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, they just announced it, but
I've never really played any Quantic Dreams games. Are they good?
Did you play Heavy Rain?
No, they always seem very Canadian.
Oh, they're like very much
quantify that. What do you mean?
I don't know.
They're very much lacking in gameplay and emphasizing story.
I guess I mean not very exciting.
They often have a whole bunch of alternate endings depending on what you do. I think Heavy Rain was a great game. It's for PS3. It's one of the games I had to go back and buy a PS3 to play through. So, Beyond Two Souls was okay. I don't think it was probably like the worst Quantic Dream game I've played to date. But
that was the one with Ellen Page, right?
Yeah. It was still not bad.
Aside from that, there was a bunch of release dates I don't care about for games I don't care about. And a whole bunch of VR shit. There's a Final Fantasy VR thing that got revealed.
Yep. And then there's like a VR for the Until Dawn game. There's like a new game.
Cool.
Yeah. Like Red Knight or something, I think it was called.
Yeah.
I loved the... They showed a trailer for a VR ESPN style game, but it was like robot battles. You know what I'm talking about? It's like
I saw that.
It's like a sports event because there's like an announcer going like, and he's going for the goal, and it's just like giant robots blowing each other up. Kind of like I don't know if you guys remember this game, but like Monday Night Combat or something like that.
I do. I played it on my 360.
It's sort of like that, where it's like a sporting event where teams just try to kill each other.
And, I liked Monday Night Combat. I was talking about that with somebody the other day. I could not remember the name of the game.
But it was like they showed the demo of that game, and it was a VR game, and all these people went like, wow, like wearing VR helmets. It was so ridiculous.
They also announced creation of their competitive gaming league. I can't find anything about that right now, though. Maybe I just streamed that.
Are you talking about their esports league?
Yeah.
I think... Is Sony have an esports league now?
Yeah.
Okay. I know Activision started one.
I swear I saw that Sony started one.
Yeah, I thought I read the one that Activision started one as well.
God damn it. All right.
Because it was like being one of the people involved was like a former CEO of ESPN for the Activision esports competitions.
All right. Well, I'll just assume that I misread that.
What else is in the news? Well, these games are coming out, I guess.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks we'll have plenty to talk about, but there's a whole bunch of leaked Fallout 4 gameplay details recently.
Yeah, I looked at it. It wasn't really details. It was more just like people, like a dude wandering around in games. So you got to see more of the game, but there wasn't any story details or anything leaked.
So there's a game me and my friends have been waiting forever to like come out called Overwatch. It's the latest like Blizzard party game.
Yeah, I think you and your friends or everybody in the world.
It's still not quite an open beta, but they've let select people start playing it. There's been a lot of Twitch streamers playing Overwatch, basically just against other dev teams right now. But it's a pretty interesting looking game.
How so?
It's just like, it's like Team Fortress 2, basically. But I feel it's more position, like the... It's more strategy intensive than I've ever seen a Team Fortress 2 game be, like in positioning and synergy.
Okay.
The Xbox One Kinect got a price cut announced anyway.
Just the Kinect?
Well, the Kinect got a $50 price cut, and the system that comes bundled with the Kinect,
that makes sense. I mean,
also got a $50 price cut.
So I always thought that the just Kinect was way too expensive.
Yeah.
Like if you bought I think I looked into it because I didn't feel like I needed a Kinect. So I was thinking about buying the system without the Kinect.
It's like $100.
Maybe buying the Kinect later. But then I found out it's like $50 cheaper if I just bought the two of them bundled together.
No, it was $150. It's $100 now for just the Kinect.
God, it's $150. Yeah. I think it was only like an $80 or $100 increase if you bought the two of them together. Like, okay, whatever, fine.
Yeah, so that's exciting. I don't know, I might wait for another price cut before I get an Xbox One. By then, everybody will have moved on.
Yeah, I really want a PS4, but only to play like 3 games.
At this point, you should wait for the next generation of PS4s to come out.
Yeah, and then
support like...
No, I mean, it's not like it's going to have backwards compatibility or anything.
It might have 4K support.
And, oh, you're talking about like an updated PS4.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were saying like you should just wait for the PS5 to come out.
No.
That's what I'm waiting on.
PS5.
Yeah. Do you remember when Xbox One backwards compatibility is supposed to go live?
Yeah, it's supposed to be November.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So I'm waiting on that too. This will be fun.
Shitty as fuck PlayStation free games this month. PlayStation Plus games.
They're not that great. They're not that great on Xbox One this month either.
The PS3 ones are pretty good. It's Beyond Good and Evil and Mass Effect 2, but it's Magicka 2 and Walking Dead Season 2 for PS4.
Right. Magicka 2 is pretty good, isn't it?
Not a vampire, not a vampire.
You don't like Magicka? I mean, serious, really. I mean, I've never played them, but I know they're popular games.
I've looked at the trailers. They just didn't seem super interesting. I don't know.
I played Magicka 1, and it was not super interesting.
They're kind of low rent. They're like, it's like $5 to buy it on Steam.
Yeah. But
I don't know.
Walking Dead Season 2, though. I mean, we only got Walking Dead Season 1. That game's been out forever.
I never finished Season 1.
This has only been out for forever minus 1 year, probably.
If I want to play Season 2, I feel like I have to go back and play Season 1. And I didn't make it all the way through that when I had it on PC. So, I don't know. Still kind of shitty.
I mean, that's all the news.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's it?
Yeah. I read a story that...
Well, please, tell us about it.
It wasn't anything definite, just speculation, but most of the time HBO would have released or given a date for when the next Game of Thrones thing was going to air by now. In the past years they have, so they're thinking it might be getting pushed back until like summer instead of in spring.
He might be asking them to so he could put out the book before the next season, because I'm assuming that since Jon Snow is alive, that's a pretty big spoiler for the book.
Is he? Or is he just, is that just like, is he just there for flashbacks?
And they haven't said it officially. They've never done flashbacks really in the show.
Well, they did that one flashback at the beginning of last season. And in the pictures,
if you look at him, he's in like Stark armor and clothing and stuff.
Okay.
Huh.
So maybe he gets brought back from the dead, like,
yeah.
The fire.
Well, yeah. I mean, everybody knows that.
She's hanging around in the show, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, she went back to Castle Black. That's where she is right now.
Yeah.
It's a big non-spoiler. Like, everybody knows that he's still alive and he gets brought back from the dead.
In some form or another. We just don't know.
Yeah.
I also read that article you put in about... I actually saw it somewhere else like 2 weeks ago about how they almost got... Like Metal Gear Solid almost got sued by the producers of Escape from New York for like some sort of character copyright infringement.
Because Snake is basically a dead-on rip-off of Snake Plissken.
Well, I mean, even in... His name is Snake in Metal Gear Solid 1. Metal Gear Solid 2, he's like kind of undercover when you meet him as Raiden, and he introduces himself as Plissken. Yeah. So...
Yeah. It's just more of an homage.
Yeah.
But John Carpenter really
likes... Yeah, John... Like, I mean, it was like the French producing company that wanted to pursue the lawsuit, and John Carpenter is like, yeah, fuck that.
Yeah.
It's like... He's like... Yeah, the character is kind of similar, but the stories don't have anything to do with one another.
Yep. I guess Nintendo's smartphone games got delayed.
Oh, what a shame.
Yeah, nobody gives a shit.
Yeah. I don't know. They might be good.
Name a smartphone game that's good.
Don't even say it.
Marvel Puzzle Quest.
Nope.
Toon Toon.
Nope.
You walked into that.
No,
I don't know.
I'm still waiting for this Magic Puzzle Quest.
Magic Puzzle Quest.
Yeah, me too. I haven't heard anything about that since they announced
it. They probably
it.
Like launched it, and everybody's like, "What? No, nobody cares about Puzzle Quest anymore." Like, fine.
I wish that were true, man. Get my X23. No problem if nobody cared about it.
How many years have you played Marvel Puzzle Quest?
I'm now? on my second year.
Yeah,
I was in the beta.
Holy shit! Long. They've sold a lot of Wii U's just for Mario Maker.
Yeah.
God, that pisses me off. I don't know why, but it just really pisses me off.
Didn't they announce something about the new Nintendo system? That it's like a handheld and console hybrid?
I think we talked about that last week, but yeah. It's going to be some sort of handheld hybrid.
Kind of like a Wii U.
Or like, I think it's supposed to be like a PS Vita.
Mm, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I mean, doesn't the Wii U already have like sort of a handheld hybrid?
It is, except it has to be within range of the system. So
the PlayStation 1 can be anywhere, right? The Vita?
Yeah.
Well, the Vita is its own system.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can play like even like without outside of any kind of range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can play through like a network.
I'm really actually thinking about picking up a Vita.
I mean, you already have a PS4, might as well, right?
Yeah.
Why not just drop another $200 on something?
Like, I could probably get it cheaper than that and like Craigslist or something.
Well, they announced that they are stopping any game development for the Vita, so now's the time to get on it since they've announced that they're never making another game for it.
Yeah. The fucking president of Sony came on and said that's bullshit, though.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. I don't know where.
That's so weird. They confirmed that Sony is no longer. I guarantee you, January 1st, they'll be like, oh, no, we were joking. We just didn't want to announce that right before fucking Christmas. When we want to push all these PS Vitas out the door that are sitting on shelves.
I mean, it's pretty obvious that they're not making any Vita games. Because, like, you didn't see shit for Vita, like, from the Sony Paris show. And, like, E3 had, like, three games that are out now, I think. So.
Yeah, probably whoever was sitting at Sony when they read that, like, God damn it, do you not know that Christmas is 2 months away.
Yeah. Probably got in trouble with their board. Yeah, so that's definitely it for news, though. Movie?
Yeah, so let's go and talk about Salem's Lot in our last segment of Reboot-o-ween 2015. So I chose Salem's Lot. I'm a big fan of the book. I think it's probably the best horror book ever written. And that's not just me giving Stephen King an HJ right now. It's legitimately like probably a perfect horror book. It's amazing pacing. It's just all around fantastic book. They originally in the 70s, I think late 70s, early 80s, they did a TV series for it, like a, you know, mini series. I think it was like like 3 hours long or whatever. 4 hour long. Sorry, episodes on TV. You know, it had its problems, but all around it was pretty good. It definitely veered away from a lot of what was in the book, but you know, it was a made for TV movie. They weren't really, you know, giving a shit. Out of all of the Stephen King made for TV movies, it is by far the best. By far the best. But in 2004, they decided to do it again. And they got Rob Lowe, who you guys might know from Rob Lowe shit, Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec, yeah, that's all I know him from, really.
He's in some new lawyer show right now.
A very pretty sequel.
Yeah, yes. So it's got Rob Lowe, it's got Donald Sutherland, it's got Rutger Hauer, and those are about it. And a bunch of like B TV actors that you know when you see them, but you have no idea what their names are. So, Danny, what did you think about it?
So, I'd never seen the original Salem's Lot, so I watched that, and it was 3 hours long. And then I watched the reboot series, and it was also 3 hours long. And the plot was also really familiar to me because I'd never seen either one of them, so I didn't know what I was looking at. But I've actually watched a Japanese anime show called Cheeky, which I now know is just the Japanese version of Salem's
Lot. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I had no idea that was the thing.
I don't know if I would really recommend it. Like, if you can imagine the pacing of the original, like, you know, 4 hour, for the 3 hours of the original, like, 1979, and just kind of imagine that as, like, 12 hours instead. Yeah. That's sort of what...
Your time, I would love that.
It's like really funny because in the Japanese series, they have to make all of these adjustments to make sure it fits. Like in Japan, cremation is the normal burial. So they're like, and we're in this remote town that has an ancient custom of burying people instead of cremating them.
Nice.
But the things that stood out to me as I was watching Salem's Lot is like in the Shiki series, the doctor is perplexed by he just keeps diagnosing anemia. And like Like, it's the first time I'd ever heard the word.
Yeah.
So when the second time I'd ever heard the word, it just stood out to me, especially since it was in the same sort of genre. And then, like, Doctor and some local kids find out that there's zombie, they're like vampires, and they set fire to the town and crap. So it is like very reminiscent. The only, like, one of the main differences, it's a whole family of vampires moves into an abandoned mansion instead of just one.
Yeah. So, have you seen the original Salem's Lot, Matt?
Or? No.
No, you couldn't find them. I own the original, and I ordered the reboot off of Amazon for $4, which got here in 2 days, by the way.
Nice. I should have done that.
So I thought the original was really good. The reboot is actually incredibly cheesy in some aspects.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that's really cheesy about it is it's told as a framed story. What I mean by that is the first sequence of the movie is some hobo in a feeding place, like a church holding like food for the homeless event. A hobo chases a priest up some stairs and tackles him out of a window to trying to kill him.
Yeah.
And then they go to the hospital, and there's this black doctor, and he's talking to the hobo, and he's like, as a good Christian man, give me one reason why I should save you at all after attacking a priest like that. And then the hobo just goes like, well, he says Jerusalem's Lot, but Salem's Lot. And then it's like, it goes into this like sort of like flashback. Like the whole rest of the story is him retelling it to the black doctor. And because of that, we get to hear Rob Lowe narrating like half the story.
Yeah.
And it's like really cheesy narration too. It kind of reminds me of like what like Sin City or like a Batman movie would be if Batman narrated the whole time, because he's like talking about it and he's like, Jerusalem's Lot, a city like a small town unlike any other small town you might find anywhere in America, but this town has its secrets. Yeah. He's like, Crockett is the richest man in Salem's Lot, not that the IRS knows that. These people protect each other. It's like, yeah, looking back, like revisiting just Salem's Lot, like was looking through my childhood through a tinted shaded window or something.
It's just like
everything's mostly the same, but you can tell that it's never the same, or like, you know, and just like all this.
It's just like early Stephen King prose, which, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
and then like he's like teaching and he's like, he goes, at one point he's in like a teacher's class and the students are asking him questions like, why would you want to write about this town? And he's like, don't like marginalize this town. Everything happens in this town. And whatever passion you're feeling for the boy sitting next to you is just as great as any celebrity's passion might be for another celebrity. And they're like, and he goes like, gives all these like cheesy metaphors and stuff like that. It's
I saw that scene, but the sound was so bad. It was just like,
So it's like, it's trying to paint Salem's Lot. It's like trying to have this like dark, gritty, like grittiness to it. That
one thing that I didn't like about the reboot is the story itself is very much, it's based on the time period, which it's told. Like, it's very much a set in the 70s. Like, I think the book takes place in like 76. And if you retell the story in 2005, it doesn't work the way it's originally told. So one thing for you guys that you've never heard of Salem's Lot, Stephen King decided that he wanted to, that Dracula was his favorite horror novel. And he was talking to his wife, and this is back, I think it was his second novel he ever written. So he was drunk and high, like pretty much 24 hours a day. And in one of those late nights, he was talking to his wife and some friends, and they're like, he was like, you know, I really want to write a book where, you know, Dracula comes to New York, like in the 70s. And his wife was like, he would probably get hit by a cab and immediately get killed, you know. And they're talking about it, and he's like, wow, it doesn't really, like, having Dracula in the 70s in New York doesn't really work because of, like, the times. Like, it wouldn't translate how he came to London because of our, like, technology and everything. And then he got to thinking, he's like, but what if he came to America? You know, I bet he would go to a small town. So the book is a retelling of Dracula, pretty much. But he comes to a small town in the middle of nowhere in America. Yeah, it's just really good story, guys. So instead of Dracula, you get this vampire called Kurt Barlow, who comes from, you don't, what's great about the book, and I don't know, in the original, is you don't get a lot of information. You don't know where he really comes from. It's all very, like, mysterious. Like, Stephen King doesn't feel the need to give us, like, an entire backstory on, you know, Kurt Barlow and his thrall and everything. But he comes to Jerusalem's lot, kills a person, and the entire, like, town gets ran over by vampires. Pretty much. So go on. Sorry, I was giving a little...
Nah, you got it. But... I mean, I don't think I'm going to give my usual scene by scene retelling since sure, it's a 3-hour movie.
Very long movie.
But a lot of characters. The essence of it is that Mears. What is his first name again?
Ben Mears.
Ben Mears has returned to Salem's Lot after a great amount of time as a successful writer. And he is looking to, well, maybe not successful, but he is a writer.
Yeah, he sold 3 books. One of them did really well, and then, like, the next two were kind of meh.
And he's looking for a new story. Something that's, like, his books in the original were, like, just fiction books or something. They didn't really factor into the storyline at
They're
all.
They're like your great American novel kind of deal. Like To Kill a Mockingbird.
Ben Myers in this book actually writes, like, nonfiction stories, sort of.
Yeah, they made him a Afghanistan
Afghanistan war journalist. Yeah, and he actually retells the story of how he was captured by Afghani terrorists and saved by a company of, like, Marines or Army men or something
totally
like that.
Totally fabricated. Not in the books at all. And it was definitely the miniseries came out in 2004, like, less than a year after the Iraqi invasion in 2003. So it's, you know, if you remember, everything in the early 2000s that was on TV had to have something to do with war.
And, after the Marines save him, they take him to a Afghani village and, like, murder a bunch of civilians or something like that as war casualties. But because he writes this book, like, 3 of them get court-martialed and thrown in prison or something like that for war crimes. And, like, the only reason I mention that is it actually comes into the story a couple of times while, like, characters will confront him about...
People in a small town probably wouldn't like that very much.
Yeah. Like, they were being Americans. Like, no war has... There's no such thing as a war without casualties, son. And, like, just, like, stuff yelling, like, really rednecky stuff like that. At the same time that Ben was coming in, another group of 2 people have moved into the town as well. And they're... The vampire actually was in Kurt Barlow.
And Richard Straker.
Who no one has seen yet. And Richard Straker, who is President Snow from The Hunger Games, in case everyone wants to know that. I was looking at it, like, I know he's in something I've seen recently. And it took me like 15 minutes to put it together.
Donald Sutherland, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, recently. I was like, what have I seen recently that this guy's in? The thrall is opening up a antique store in this little small town.
I'd like to point out in the book, Richard Straker is described as, like, a thin, extremely tall, bald man in his, like, early 40s.
I don't think either story really fit that description. Yeah. Either movie fit that description. But I could see that more of, like, a lurchy sort of character.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been nice. They're all, like, both in the reboot and this one, they're very charismatic, like, good-looking gentlemen.
Yeah.
There's, like, a whole bunch of side stories that I'm not going to get into, like the bus driver Vietnam War.
Yeah.
Basically a bunch of kids are trying to get back at this bus driver that they hate, and so they sneak out in the middle of the night and break into his bus. And when they're running away from him, one of them that gets grabbed and shoved under ice until he dies, I guess. And at the same time, like, it's like you later learn it's President Snow did it, and to feed his new master, because there's like a team of 2 people bringing him in a giant crate, which was like not... Like, it was, like, much more prominent a scene in the original series than in the reboot.
It's That scene in the book is probably one of the scariest scenes like of all. Because first of all, in the reboot, for some reason, so the vampire is coming by crate, and so Crockett, the local like real estate mogul, gets the two good old boys and hires them a U-Haul, and he's like, and Richard Straker, who is arranging for his master to come to the U.S., like, I need you to go to the Portland docks, pick him up, bring him. I'm going to give you 5 locks. I need you to lock like the front door, the back door, and the basement, and leave the keys on the basement table. And so in the book, it's really, really like they don't know, you know, you don't know what's in the box yet.
Right.
Because, you know, the first time you're reading it. And so, like, they're bringing it to Salem's lot, and they keep hearing things like in the U-Haul. I don't understand. And so they get this house that's been abandoned, and it's like sitting on top of the hill, and, you know, people were murdered there. And it's like this big foreboding place. And they have to like take this box that weighs 10 million pounds, like the two of them down like these old stairs into the cellar of this house. And like get down there, and you know, they keep hearing stuff, and there's a vampire in the box, so like there's like it projects like an aura of terror, you know.
And it's like cold to the touch, yeah. And it's like moving towards them. The box is moving towards them, and
it's super creepy. And they get down there, and like they're trying to put it down, and like they're like, "Fuck, just get out of here!" So they like both run out of the basement like chickens. They get up and they realize that they didn't leave the keys down there, so like they have to play paper rock scissors who goes back down. And so like guy's like, "Fuck, I just want to leave. Like, let's not even take the keys down." He's like, "No, man, we'll never get another job with Crockett again." So like they take the key. The guy like takes the keys down. When he takes the keys down, he sees like. He notices like in the corner what looks like a clothes of like a crumpled up like kids' clothes, which I mean it was just really like creepy scene.
Yeah. But
in the reboot, they're just like take it in the front door.
Yeah, it was like much less prominent scene in the reboot. And then the guy just happens to look in his car and he sees something in a plastic bag, like a big garbage bag. And then the next morning they realize the boy's gone and. Like there's like a man, like a townwide manhunt for him, but it doesn't really come to anything. And during the night, the boy that disappears comes to his brother and flying outside his window, like open the window, and kills him. I guess in the reboot, he's in the hospital for the first time. His brother comes, but like sucks him dry, basically. And like this is basically what keeps happening throughout the entire movie is that people die. And then they come back and feed on their friends and family because they're most likely to invite them in or something. Mm-hmm. Though they do seem to have some sort of mesmerizing power.
Yeah, it's very classical vampires. So there's no like the vampires that the Barlow makes are like kind of like thralls, like kind of vampires, and they have to be invited in. Crucifixes hurt them, like super classic, like Dracula stuff, which is super refreshing in today's times.
Yeah.
But like that just keeps happening over and over again. Is like people start disappearing or missing or dead, and then like bodies are disappearing from the morgue and stuff.
During the day, like, shops are closed because their owners are dead.
And, yeah.
Like, the whole, like, town just starts dying.
Yeah. And then, like, no one really seems to notice because, whatever.
It's going a small town. The
day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right up until, so Mears has been seeing this girl. And there's, like, another guy that likes her. And so he gets, like, super jealous and just punches, like, middle of the day, just, like, picks a fight with Mears. In the reboot, he's already a vampire when he does this. In the old one, in the original, I like couldn't stop laughing at the fight because like literally the Mears like walks into his room and there's just like what is it like? It's like a closet or a bureau, like a big box of some sort. I don't know what you would call it in these days, but. The guy is actually inside of whatever this big piece of furniture is. And rather than just like opening it, and like attacking him, he like bursts out of it. Like it breaks apart around
him. Surprise, bitch!
And Mears just like turns around like, what the fuck? So I thought it was so much better. I was laughing so hard at that scene. But in the reboot, he just walks up to him on the street, like covered in like a blank, like, hats and like sunglasses and scarves to hide, protect him from the sunlight, and punches Mears, and they get into a fight, and Mears immediately knocks him down. And he starts going, ah, ah, with the sunlight on him. And they both get thrown in jail. And
the scene where he crawls through the vent.
So they're both in jail cells in the police station, and they're connected by a vent. This is probably the best scene in the reboot. But he's like going like, "I'm coming to get you, Mears. Wait until nighttime, and then we'll finish this." And the vent is only like maybe like a foot and a half by a foot big, and he's like, so nighttime comes and he's like, "I'm coming for your mirrors. I'm in the event right now." And he's like, "What? You can't possibly fit in the event." And he's like, "I had to break both my shoulder bones and my wrist, like in my like hip bone, but I'm in here and I'm coming for you." And he's like crawling towards him in the event. And then like, this is why that reference comes from. But he's like, "You're a coward, Mears. You'll never be a bloody pirate." And he's like, "What did you say?" Because that's a reference to his childhood. This is like in both the reboot and the original, but when Mears was a child, he went into the house, the haunted house where the vampire is, and it's supposed to have like some big foreboding evil presence in it. And in the original, it doesn't really explain what he saw in the house too well, but in this one, he like later on tells it like step by step what happens. He's like, "I went into the house. I saw the Ed Marlowe or Marston."
Yeah, Hubert Marston.
I saw Marston.
The guy that owned the house back then.
Yeah, and then I had to hide in the closet. And then I saw he was like talking to something and it hung him with a chain. And then I ran out of the closet and I saw his wife dead in the bathroom. And I like curled up in a ball because I could hear her saying, "Help me," over and over again, even though she was dead and her lips weren't moving. And then when someone found me the next morning, I realized it was actually, there was a small child slowly bleeding to death in the bathtub. And he was the one saying, "Help me."
So the Marston house that the vampire moves into, like the theme of the book and the moves and stuff is that sometimes such bad things can happen in one place that the place becomes like a charged battery for negative energy. And, you know, it attracts like shitty things and bad things happen. So Stephen King was like, what if a house like had so much like evil into it that it attracted the most evil it possibly could? And for him, that would be Dracula.
Kind of like Amityville.
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
And so like, you know, there's actually like two short stories before the book. And in one of them, there's like a Cthulhu cult that's in Salem's Lot. And this is actually the second time Salem's Lot has been wiped out. Because in the like 1800s, they had like a group of Quakers that lived there, and there was like some elder god or whatever, and like this guy had to come and like pretty much like burn down the town or whatever, and so it got rebuilt. And then this guy named Hubert Marston was a hitman for the mob, and they put him out to pasture by buying him this house in Salem's Lot. He moved out there. And it turns out he was like an occultist and stuff, and like he was murdering local children and sacrificing them in his house and stuff. And then he killed himself. And then all that energy is like still built up in the house. And then this, you know, vampire master from Europe is attracted to it. So he comes to America to live in the house.
Yeah. But the reference I was making is that the reason he went into the house is because his friends dared him to. And they're like, "You'll never be a bloody pirate if you can't go into the Marston house."
Yeah, so yeah, because when he's a kid, there's this group of like other kids that call themselves the Bloody Pirates. And to join the Bloody Pirates, you had to like do a dare, and they dared him to go into the Marston house.
So he's like crawling through the vent going like, "You're a coward, Mears. You'll never be a bloody pirate."
But take in mind, the vent is like 12 inches by 12 inches. And he's like scooting through it.
They show like a video, like a little image. It's obviously like manipulated, like fit him in. It's very bad video editing. But eventually he's like pushing his face up against the other side of the vent. He's like, "Invite me in, Mears, and we'll finish this." But then he ends up dying because he hasn't eaten there for like a day and a half or something in jail. I don't know what else really significant happens before the end.
Keep on telling the story.
There's like this one kid obsessed with monsters, and he's the only one that's been able to rebuke a vampire attack so far, basically. Like a vampire appeared at his window and he's like, "No, get out of here."
So, you know, like the three kids that went to terrorize the school bus, when they left, one of the kids got killed, and this was the other kid that was with him. So, like, the two brothers get killed and turn into vampires, and their friend is this kid.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's being visited, like I said, by his friends and family who are now vampires, but he's rebuked them, and he figures out that there's a vampire, so he goes off to try and kill it, and Susan, the girl that Ben Mears has been going out with, sees him, and so she tries to go into the house and stop him. And that what ends up happening is they both just get kidnapped by the thrall, President Snow. She gets turned into a vampire. He escapes by smacking Sutherland over the head. but now it's the doc. There's a doctor, and Ben Mears and this kid are now the vampire hunting squad. There's also the like a black teacher, but he's in the hospital because he had a heart attack. Yes, they enlist the priest as well. So when they're trying to convince people to leave town, the vampire shows up, and they've because the thrall is dead now, he needs a new thrall. Sutherland's dead, so he needs a new person to protect him during the daytime. So he chases after the priest, and somehow like the priest is not a very strong man. He overwhelms him with fear and tells him that his faith is not strong enough to fight him off, and that he's like, "Have I been misled this entire time?" And he's like, "Yes. Now drink my blood."
He's like, "Whoever feeds you is your God."
Yeah, whoever feeds you. Is there really no God? Whoever feeds you is your God.
I saw that scene.
So that's Father Callahan. Interesting story. Have I talked about the Dark Tower series on here before?
A little bit,
but not enough, yeah. I don't think.
So Father Callahan actually, like in the book, that happens, and he leaves town. They're like, "What the fuck, dude? Like, you're supposed to help us fight these vampires." And he's like, "I'm out." And just like gets drunk and leaves. And he's such an interesting character that like 20 years later during the Dark Tower, you actually find him like in the fifth book. They the gunslinger and his group come across Father Callahan. And they don't say it outright at the beginning, but he's like in this small town, and it's the fifth book of the Dark Tower series, and it's kind of like a Magnificent Seven type story. Like there's these like killer robots that are like raiding this town, and Father Callahan is there with the people, and he's like their like leader or whatever. And so the good guy, like the gunslingers, come and they're like talking to him, and he's like, "You know, I don't think I can fight these guys off." And then he starts telling them his past about how he used to live in Salem's Lot. And you're like, "Oh shit, same guy." And he become like, he leaves with the gunslingers, and for the next three books is like a main character. But it's pretty cool because like 20 years later, Stephen King's like, "All right, here's this guy's retribution."
Yeah. I like how I think there's been a lot of talk recently about how all of Stephen King's mythoses are like tied together.
Yeah.
But I haven't read enough of his books for a lot of them to make sense to me.
There's a Stephen King book that came out like 2 or 3 years ago, which is really good. It's the 11-23-63. It's about the guy that goes back in time and tries to stop the Kennedy assassination. It's actually a mini series on Hulu with James Franco that comes out next year. It looks really, really good.
Oh, yeah. I saw something about that.
Yeah, but in that... of course, you know, Stephen King's, all of his books take place in Maine. So the time, so the door to Maine, the door that the guy finds that takes him back to the 60s is in Maine. And it's in the, it's next to the town of Derry. So like in the book, like he's traveling to go to Texas and he stops in Derry and ends up talking to the kids from It. and he like comments like how like, you know, just like everything in Derry feels evil and everything. It's kind of cool. But yeah, every single Stephen King book is interconnected, which I think is a pretty good feat for him having 1 million books.
So now they are vampire hunting squad, and they find a whole bunch of vampires in the Marston house, and they just stake them and kill them. There's a lot more vampire killing in the reboot than there was in the original series.
More action.
But they find Susan, and he's like, "Wait, let's not stake her. Maybe if we kill the main vampire, she'll turn back into a regular person."
Fair point. It comes up in a lot of vampire movies.
But I mean, like, it didn't seem to bother him for the 17 people they staked previously.
Well, he wasn't banging those people, was he, Danny? It
didn't really seem fair.
I'm just saying, there's some obvious...
Hey, no. What it's saying is he's a human being. He's like, "Fuck, I'm going to kill all these vampires." Except her. I did enjoy having sex with her.
If we could
murder her, that would be great.
I mean, it's the same point I brought up during the... Fright Night one. Yeah. It's like suddenly it's important to save human lives rather than just kill vampires.
Well, I don't think it's important it's important to those specific people, which yeah. I find like flawed. And I think about it often. I'm like, yeah, I'd probably kill everybody except yeah. for some people. I might save those people.
Yeah. I mean, you have to thin them out somewhat, yeah. or else you'll never make it to the head vampire.
Yeah.
Except like, but it does not, it's not like these vampires are really impeding them from finding the head vampire. They could just bypass all of them if they wanted to. Probably would have saved them some time if their only goal was just to kill the main vampire from the beginning. But it turns out he's not at the Marston house, so they have to live through another night of vampire horror. And it's like much more pronounced than it was in the original series. I think there was maybe 8 vampires like kind of in mm-hmm. the town in the original series. And in this one, it's like every single person in the town is a vampire now. There's like the bus driver is like attacked by a swarm of like 14 children vampires and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then during the day, the now priest thrall kills the black teacher in the hospital by staking him through the heart. Sort of like obviously under control of the main vampire because yeah. he's
talking in a really weird voice. Yeah, that sucks because
in the book, like they have that confrontation with the vampire and he like forces the priest to drink his blood and the priest just like freaks out. Like he doesn't even bother killing him because he just wants to make him his bitch because like he's like a man yeah. of God. He's like, I'm not even gonna fucking kill you. I'm going to like destroy this whole town. There's nothing that you can do about it. And so the priest literally goes home and drinks an entire bottle of Jack Daniels and leaves town. Never comes back.
When he attacks the priest during that last night, the little boy is there and he just barely gets away, but he gets covered in some sort of white powder. So like, is it like chalk dust? Is he actually in a school?
It was 2004. It was anthrax.
Yeah, and then they find Crockett. Crockett, the real estate agent, is informed by the chief of police basically that he has brought this evil upon them because they never actually bought the house. He bought the house and let them stay there because as a vampire, he needed to be invited into the town. Right. So they're like, hey, we want you to buy this house, invite us to stay into it. And we will give you 30 acres of land if you do. And then the guy's like, it seems like a great deal to me. Might as well. So he like realizes the error of his ways and tries to commit suicide. But after they stop him, he's like, God, it's just so fucking frustrating. He's like kicking the wall and like all this white powder falls out. And he's like, it could have been drywall. That might have been what the white powder was. And he's like, the Ben Mears has been staying like a boarding house. And he's like, the basement of my boarding house is under renovation right now. And he tries calling it. And he's like, I'm living with 5 people in this house and no one is answering the phone. I think they're all dead. So that's how they go there. And there's like another little scene reminiscent of the original series where when they're in the Marston house, the stairs mysteriously just like get torn up into the basement. And because like the kid just opens the door and runs through and there's just not stairs there anymore and he just falls flat on his face. In this, the doctor starts going down the stairs and they collapse and there's like a working saw blade right underneath and he's like, and he gets all like gutted. So oh, wow. They like left a trap for him. So I said the vent scene was my favorite scene. Probably my second favorite scene is Ben Mears staking the vampire because they yet again do like a really cheesy sort of confrontation between the two of them where he like offers him like immortal life and obviously, but he also has this like weird conversation with him. He's like, you as a writer, you've already suckled at the stories of others, just like living through their lives and retelling their stories as your own or something like that. And he's like, which one of us is truly the vampire? Something like that. I mean, like, it's like a very classic sort of bad guy argument to make. Like, which one of us is really the bad guy? And I mean, in some situations, it almost has merit.
It's you, the one that needs blood.
Yeah, yeah. In some situations, it's almost a fair comparison to make. But it's like, no, I mean, you're actually drinking blood. I mean, like, you are physically a vampire. Yeah, I could maybe be passed off as like a metaphorical vampire, but it's quite clear that you're the real vampire. So I'm just going to stake you in the heart right now. And he's like, ah, and he dies. But it's just such a cheesy sort of like 10-minute conversation between these two characters. just so reminiscent of like just this blah good.
We're not
versus,
so different, you and
yeah,
I.
Yeah, we're not so different, you and I. Sort of moment.
Yeah.
He's like, "Don't you realize you'll never be perfect until you're evil? Only in evil can you find perfection."
Some of Rutger Hauer's best work, man.
Yeah. But then they stake Susie at the end, which is what they did in
like
the original, too.
I like to think that whoever was directing this TV miniseries are like, "We're giving you Rutger Hauer for the vampire." And he like went home and watched Blade Runner. He's like, "I'm going to recreate that magic, you know, right at the end of Blade Runner where like, you know, we're all memories like tears in the rain." Like that big like Rutger Hauer's like famous dialogue at the end of Blade Runner. It's like beautiful, just amazing, like Rutger Hauer being like a villain and just like amazing, amazing monologue. And that guy's like, "I'm going to recreate this on TNT. So he like writes this really shitty monologue for Rutger Hauer. He's like, "What, you know that like is a writer and like I'm a murderer, right?" He's like, yeah, it'll be perfect. He's like, "Okay, sure, whatever."
Yeah,
so, and then
the black doctor who's been taking care of Hobo Ben Mears this entire time is like, "Oh, so you had a little kid with you?" Oh, so like there you find out like the reason he went after the priest is because he was like basically the last vampire left in Salem Lot, or vampire supporter, I guess you would call him. So then the guy's like, "So that's why you wanted to kill the priest, and you had a little kid with you that helped you." And then the black dart goes like, "Oh shit." And he like runs into the other room and the priest, who is just like in like critical condition, just has like a pillow over his head and he's dead. And then he's like, "Fuck." And the little kid walks up to Ben Mears as he's dying. And he's like, "We got him. We finally got him all." And then Ben Mears is able to like pass away into eternity with the knowledge that he has finished his journey quest. Q painted black. By the way, is there a more like syndicated like song than Painted Black, do you think? In like TV, movies, video games. The only reason I say that is cuz I was watching the Bengals game and I caught a Call of Duty Black Ops 3 like commercial and it had Painted Black in it, and I immediately went home and watched this and it had Painted Black in it. I'm like, "God damn it. Painted Black is in a lot of video games, movies, TV shows, and commercials."
Yep.
Yeah. The 2004 reboot of Salem's Lot is pretty awful. They do a really good job of like butchering the story. And I have to say, it was very like they shoehorned this war theme in that came out of nowhere. It was horrible. Like in the
I think it was all just for that last scene where you could say like he was a vampire suckling. Because yeah. I mean, like his story destroyed like three soldiers' lives or whatever. Yeah. He like sucked their life so that he could sell books or something. It was all for that metaphor. I feel like it all came down to that metaphor.
It was horrible. Like in the original, like in the book, you know, it opens with Ben Mears and the kid, and the kid's much younger in the book. Like the kid in the 2004 reboot looks like 18. Yeah. Like the kid is like 10 years old. And it opens up and they've fled Jerusalem's Lot and they're living in Mexico to get away from everything because like it's the '70s. Like nobody's going to fucking believe them, like what they've been through. So they like go to Mexico cause they're like, "Fuck it. I'm out. This shit's crazy." And you know, the guy like gets up and he drives like 2 hours away, like once a week to the border. Cause they get a like Portland, Maine newspaper there that he's got ordered. And he keeps like, you know, he reads the newspaper every day and he finally like reads a newspaper. It has like a snippet in Jerusalem's Lot where like Jerusalem's Lot, the city that has disappeared and blah, 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 how it's like completely gone. And he like comes back and the boy is like training to be like a priest now, like in like a Spanish mission. He's like, "We have to go back to Salem's Lot." It's like much cooler. Like a lot better. I do not know what they were doing with the 2004 reboot, but if you have to watch one, the 1970s original miniseries is not bad. It's pretty entertaining. I like it. It changes a lot from the book, but it is not a bad movie.
The vampire in the original was like very Nosferatu-y.
Mm-hmm. He didn't talk. He was like, he looked exactly like the vampire from Nosferatu, except much taller and crazier.
The remake is very much more of a Fright Night sort of vampire.
Yep.
And, actually, now that I think about it, he looks like The 1979 one looks exactly like the vampire that lived in the basement in
What We Do in Shadows.
Yes.
Did you ever watch that, man?
Oh, What We Do in Shadows is great.
Probably the best horror comedy. Not even really horror.
Yeah, I really want to see that.
So good.
Trailers are fucking hilarious.
Did you see the trailer for, I posted it on Facebook, it's got Sam Rockwell in it, and he's like one of the phony like holy relic hunters or whatever, and there's like a mega church in Texas that's funding him, and he goes to Jerusalem to find the skull of like Goliath or whatever. What? Yeah, and it's directed by the guy that directed What We Do in Shadows, and Jermaine Clement from Flight Concords is like the like Palestinian guide that he hires, and they're like, you know, they like trying to get the skull, and they're like, there's this press conference, and like he's like, I believe Al Qaeda wants the skull of Goliath. They're like, why? And then Jermaine's like, I believe they would like to clone an army of Al Qaeda giants, Al Qaeda giant guys to fight the Americans. It just looks, it's very What We Do in Shadows, but it's, shit. Who's the guy that's in, Last Man on Earth or whatever? You know, that Fox.
Oh, fuck.
I haven't seen it.
That guy. You know what I'm talking about. Like, he's a comedian.
He's like really awkward. Like,
he's in a bunch of shit. He plays like a rival mega church pastor, and it's pretty much just like making fun of mega churches.
I can't think of a whole lot of other roles he's been in, but he's the character Randy from How I Met Your Mother, just like a couple episodes.
Yeah, so the premise is Danny McBride and that guy are both mega church pastors in Texas, and Danny McBride's church is starting to fail from being a multi-million dollar church, so he hires Sam Rockwell to go to Israel. He's like, I don't care what you find, just bring me back a relic so we can put it. He's like, I'm gonna find a skull of Goliath. But it's pretty awesome. Like, there's a scene where, like, you know, they find the skull of Goliath, and that one comedian's like, I don't care who they are or how they did this. I need you to find all of them and put dead dogs in their cars. But it just looks mad. It looks awesome. Any movie with Danny McBride, Sam Rockwell, and Jermaine Clement.
I'll watch anything with Flight of the Conchords in it.
But it looks amazing.
That's like one of my favorite episodes of Rick and Morty, is when he's like the little floating blob. Yeah. Little fart.
More are coming.
All right. But yeah, you should watch Salem's Lot sometime, Matt. Watch the original. Read the book. The book is legitimately scary. I had to stop reading it the other night in the middle of the night, which books don't often do that.
Is Return to Salem Lot any good?
I've never seen it. It's not based on the books.
Okay.
So I had no idea what it is.
I think I watched part of it on TV once, and it was a lot more vampire killing. They were like going from basement to basement in these like in the abandoned city of Salem's Lot, yeah, and killing vampires.
Yeah, so they made that in like the mid-80s, and it wasn't based, like Stephen King didn't have anything to do with it, so I've never seen it.
It's probably not good.
Oh yeah, I mean, probably not, but
I'll Rotten Tomatoes it or something.
Yeah, I'll watch it.
All right. Well, we got anything else, guys?
I think that's
it. Do we want to pick a movie for next week?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
We'll think about it. We'll talk about
it. All right. Well, all right. Thanks for listening. Send us an email at NintendoDreamcastPodcast@gmail.com and give us a review on iTunes, please.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.